This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Welcome, everybody, to this podcast. The topic is ESG, a checklist. I have with me Mark Johnson, head of institutional at LGIM, and myself, Simon Chinnery, head of DC Client Solutions. ESG, it's a topic that has a lot of noise attached to it, a lot of hot air potentially. Is it all hot air, or is there actually important, valuable messages for people who are investing, your members who are investing for the long term? So we hope with this podcast to cut through some of that noise to provide you with a checklist that will help you clarify your thoughts around ESG and how you can implement ESG into your portfolios. First of all, Mark, I think it would be helpful to just give our listeners a bit of definition around what ESG is and also what it isn't. And then what I'd like to do is go into a little bit of what we're hearing in the market, and perhaps you can share that from the DB perspective, a defined benefit, and I can share it from the DC point of view, because I think there is quite a lot of confusion out there.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Simon. So I think a couple of observations I'd start with. The first is that a lot of pension schemes now are aware of ESG. They think they need to know more about ESG. They're not entirely sure of their obligations as they pertain to the DWP regulations that you just mentioned. But there's a lot of noise in the press. They're getting a lot of noise from their key stakeholders, perhaps from their sponsor, certainly from their members. And so they feel they need to be doing something, but they're not entirely sure what that something is.
Yeah.
So let's maybe start with a definition, as you suggest. So ESG essentially is about the integration of three things. It's about environmental, social, and governance issues into your investment process. And the reason that we think it's important and many investors are increasingly looking at it is because we believe it's a better way for investors to manage the risks that they have in their portfolio and also to generate sustainable long-term returns.
And it might be worth making the point that the confusion I see, certainly, and I think you do as well, that comes up is equating ESG to ethical investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And the two should not be conflated. They are very different, as you say. Ethical investing is a well-established means of exploring investment principles, but typically by excluding certain stocks, certain sectors, based on a series of typically moral principles, be they religious or otherwise. And many charities in the UK and elsewhere pursue such policies, and indeed personal investors have long since done that because of a certain set of beliefs. ESG doesn't at its core seek to exclude companies. It seeks to work often within companies to improve the way they're run because it fundamentally recognizes that better companies make better investments.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really important point, isn't it? Because I guess, you know, we are very much in the business of the long view, the long-term investments. And, you know, it just is, to me, stating the obvious that the interest of any long-term investor has to be around exposure to, you know, well-run companies that are practicing sustainable business models. And taking note, and not just note, but actually being able to implement, identify risks and implement what they're doing to mitigate, or in some cases, to take advantage of risks. And I think, you know, climate change being an obvious example of that within pension schemes, and we've heard a lot of discussion around that. Perhaps we can come on to that later. But it feels that this is, we've always talked about the long-term view in pensions, and yet this is really crystallizing it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we must always remember that as long-term investors, we have an obligation to seek to maximize the opportunities in the investments that we choose. And as an index manager, you carry a very big stick because, of course, you're always in the room.
Yeah.
You can't walk away. You can't sell a stock. So from within, as I said earlier, it's important that you look to ensure the company is well governed and is aware of the risks that it as a business faces, including, for example, climate change. Mm. So definitely it is a long-term opportunity as well as a long-term consideration that trustees must now consider.
Mm. So, okay, so let's just dig into the DWP regs for a moment and the changes. I mean, I think the context, which I found really, really interesting, was the Law Commission's statement that trustees must weigh returns against risks, including long-term risks. And to me, what this kind of really nailed was the old adage that it's all about maximizing returns at, you know, almost and damn the consequences. It's more about, well, actually, your duty isn't just to look at getting returns. It's about understanding where the risks lie. And that is just as much your responsibility as obviously getting a good return for your members.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to understand what those risks are. Essentially, they are focusing on the financial risks. Those are the risks of investing in a particular stock or sector because you believe that its business model, indeed its existence, might be threatened by societal change, by climate change, by things that may affect it over the long term. And as you say, historically, that's not necessarily been an option available to trustees because of this sense that as a fiduciary, your obligation is to ensure that you maximize returns. Now, there is a secondary and very important consideration, which is balancing the need to ensure that you're paying pensions when they fall due with the need to ensure that the risks of doing so are mitigated.
Yeah. And we'll come on to talk about the flip side of that, which is the opportunities, which, you know, are also stressed, the long-term, identifying long-term sustainable winners. But the other thing I just wanted to touch on was that the discussion around risks, this isn't new, but I guess the regs have really kind of nailed this in terms of saying there are specific risks which you need to articulate what your strategy is around that. That's correct, isn't it?
Absolutely. The regulator is now understanding that there are risks you need to be cognizant of, that you need to, as a board, as an individual trustee, be much more aware of and discuss and debate. And having done so, to try to incorporate those into your statement of investment principles, and having done that, to then consider how you might reflect and implement those in what we would describe as an integrated ESG solution. So it's not just about discussing them and having them in a document that is essentially static.
Yes.
It's about then acknowledging that you need to do something as a result of that in the way that you invest your portfolio.
Yeah. And I mean, that for me is a really important engagement point for trustees for DC, because we would argue that if we give more information and provide trustees with data, information around what we're doing, how we're managing their money, not just in terms of risk mitigation, but also in terms of looking at companies from, you know, really a positive social outcomes point of view, these two areas are not mutually exclusive. And I think that the key for trustees is actually, by the way, if we're doing all this stuff and you understand what we're doing and it works for you, then actually communicate with members, because they want to know this information. They are hungry to know, you know, what we're doing with their money. You know, so I think there's a kind of win-win in that.
Absolutely. And I mean, that could be information around the way that we vote. It could be around the policies that we have with regard to corporate pay. It could be around employee safety records. It could be around climate concerns, emission standards. It could be against a number of different measurements that we would determine whether or not we believe a company is mitigating the risks that it faces. And as you say, I think members increasingly have a genuine interest in understanding how their pensions are being invested and whether the board is accountable for the risks and the returns that they're seeking to generate.
Yeah. So, OK, let's go on to this framework, this checklist that we have created in a paper that will be with you. And we tried not to make it a long list. We tried to make it very much practical for trustees to be able to use as a framework to implement ESG. So let's go through it. I'll just read out what the 5 points are in this framework. Build knowledge on the materiality of ESG considerations. Number two, define investment beliefs and develop them in the SIP. Number three, review strategy and asset allocation. Four, incorporate ESG issues into the selection and monitoring of asset managers. And five, report. So let's just first of all go to the first one, which is build knowledge on the materiality of ESG considerations. And Mark, I mean, here what we're talking about is really 2 points, isn't it? ESG information can be material in 2 ways. One's a source of financial outperformance, alpha, and the second is what you've talked about, protection against downside risk.
Yeah, I think what's interesting there is perhaps for the first time, trustees and the wider investment community are recognising that ESG can be a source of differentiation. Perhaps historically, the data has been somewhat patchy, and so people have preferred to focus more on the sustainability of long-term returns, perhaps irrespective of ESG. But because ESG data is now so much better, I think they are seeing, as you suggest, a connection between those two elements. Firstly, financial outperformance, in other words, the alpha component, but also as a protection against downside risk. So, for example, the tendency for companies that are caught up in some sort of financial scandal to be marked down by the market as a result of that. If one had perfect foresight, one would identify these issues and one would take corresponding action. And equally, as a long-term investor in those companies, you're able to ensure that the board is responsible and accountable for the actions that they take and hopefully to improve the overall governance framework. And that should lead to a stronger and more sustainable business. So ESG data, as I say, is much better. It's not perfect. You know, if you ask me, have you got definitive proof that if I invest along ESG lines, I will make more money than I would do if I hadn't done so? I think the jury is still out. But I think all other things being said, there is a sense that ESG is just the right way to invest.
The focus of today, what I think really matters is, okay, a trustee might get this, but how am I actually going to implement this into my portfolio? So perhaps we can talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think, I mean, a good example is climate change, which we've touched on as one of the risks that one should be minded to consider. And as you may recall, last year we introduced a product which effectively named and shamed companies which were not recognizing the systemic risk of climate change to their business model. I think we named about 8 or 9 different global companies, and we said that they weren't doing enough to mitigate the threat of climate risk. And since naming and shaming them, I think 7 of the 8 or 9 have approached us and said, what do we need to do to improve? So I think if you call out this sort of behaviour, you can get the desired effect because companies recognise that they need to do a better job. They need to be cognizant of the implications for their business model of climate change, and they respond accordingly. So there are a number of different ways that trustees can reflect those views. There are different benchmarks now available. I was in a conversation with a client this morning, and we were noting that there are now over 3 million indices available globally, which does create something of a challenge when you're trying to pick the right one for you. But you can be sure that there will be an index that reflects your values. So if you are somebody, for example, that feels that you should be exposed to low carbon, there are low carbon indices. If you want indices that take a very different view of trapped assets in major oil companies, there are indices to reflect that. So depending on your starting point for these conversations, it's very easy now to be quite precise in how you want to reflect them in your portfolio.
And that is something that should be articulated eventually into the SIP.
Yes, absolutely. So you start off, as you suggest, by defining your investment beliefs. Trustees have been doing this now for decades.
Yes.
You know, the decisions between active and passive and so on. It's an extension of that to say, we believe that by adopting these principles, we have the potential to enhance our returns and minimize risk. And then, of course, to think about a framework for what does that actually mean in practice, rather than, as I say, just to tick a box.
Mm. Okay. So, and then in terms of reviewing strategy, the third point, an asset allocation, this really obviously... This is both DB and DC, but certainly within that review. What do you think is important, given that we don't know what a set of trustees' beliefs will be, but imagining that they are looking to incorporate ESG because they believe that there are it is very important to identify financial risks, financially material risks, but also to be able to look at the long-term sustainability and opportunities within the market. So they've got all this. They've got this belief system. They beginning to articulate it. How do they go about looking at that from a strategic point of view and from an asset allocation point of view?
So the SIP, as we already know, is simply a framework. It doesn't define anything, but it sets perhaps the tone of future conversations. You can't review that really without looking at some of the actual decisions that have been taken when you're navigating that ESG landscape. So, as you say, it's important that trustees should be prepared to give an account of what they're doing. Be that in their annual report or on their website or indeed in forums for members, so that the underlying stakeholders are aware of the importance with which these issues are being addressed by the board. I think in the case of DC schemes, trustees are, I think, obliged to publish some of this information on their websites and I think you'll see far more DB schemes where they produce, for example, annual reports and letters to members and so on, explaining how they are going about addressing some of these very important risks. So that transparency, I think, is something that boards should be prepared to consider. And I think back to the sort of exam question, if you like, of, well, what are boards supposed to be doing in this space? Yes, they have to define their beliefs, and yes, they have to create a framework, but it should not be seen as simply ticking a box. And I do know that you know, there is a spectrum here of understanding and indeed of appetite. We know that trustees have a huge burden of regulation. Many of them are only able to meet quarterly, and the meeting has many other agenda items to get through. And therefore, this may not be the most pressing issue for them. And so the temptation might be just to say, well, you know, let's put this in a note and move on to the next agenda item. But I think what the regulator is trying to encourage is that you genuinely are active around these decisions, measure them, monitor them, and report on them.
Yeah, and you know, again, from the DC perspective, I do think that the opportunity here is in garnering that information, in gaining more insight through this perhaps formula structure, gaining more insight into how ESG, ES&G is implemented into their portfolio, into their default in a DC point of view. that actually there's a great opportunity to share that in the shape of stories or whatever with members. Because I think often I hear when I go to speak to trustees that engagement is a constant challenge. And I think this is a fantastic opportunity for trustees to pass this information to members to say, look, this is we're doing all this stuff. But to your point about it, this isn't just a tick box exercise. And certainly the regulator has made that very clear that they will not be satisfied if they believe that that is what's happened. But I think it goes way beyond this. I think it's a real opportunity to get better engagement, to get an alignment of, you know, of a social purpose, if you like, behind all of this, and a way of actually getting members more engaged.
Well, as you say, member engagement's critical, and we know that a number of our clients use ESG to do just that. That if you want to talk to millennials, to a younger cohort of members, you need to be able to engage them in a way that they live their lives, and therefore ESG is a perfect medium, if you like, to enable you to do that. And that is creeping into DB increasingly, even though typically the proportion of younger members will be lower. Most of our client schemes are closed to new members, to accruals. There's still a growing level of interest, given that a number of our clients are or will retire with both DB and DC benefits, of seeing the crossover, if you like, on some of these issues. I just want to mention one thing which I think perhaps is sometimes overlooked, which is we call it ESG. We spend a lot of time talking about the E, less so perhaps on the S and the G. And I think it's important that listeners remember that. A lot of interest, and indeed the DWP notes that the risks include climate change. Yes. And often that's a place where people start. It's the cause of much debate. And there are lots of ways that trustees can now incorporate that, as I mentioned, through different indices, different ways of investing, moving away from your sort of standard market cap type benchmarks and so on. But the S and the G are also important. And I know lots of clients have I mentioned, you know, for example, company safety records, but things like supply chains.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen some terrible stories of supply chain abuse where goods sold in the UK are manufactured in very poor conditions elsewhere. And I know that is a subject which to underlying members is very important. So we mustn't overlook the S and the G. And in fact, the transparency around that can often be compelling when it comes to ensuring better behaviour by companies.
Absolutely. And I mean, that should be echoed on the fourth point, incorporating ESG issues into selection and monitoring of asset managers. And absolutely to the point, to your point, that, you know, it's another checklist, but there's I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And E, S and G, you know, to cover the scope of voting, you know, consistency of voting policies, level of disclosure, as you say, you know, the transparency around any particular area. There are many areas that are absolutely crucial to the good management of a company. And you know, back to a point made earlier, that if this could be a virtual loop in the sense that if there are good news stories and they're not just greenwash, and I think hopefully we are moving beyond the sort of era of annual report and accounts with a big fat wad of sort of green hot air, really, but actually getting to the metrics, getting to things like, you know, what is your voting record, and being able to provide stories around that so that can be passed on to members. I think that's extremely powerful, and that covers, you know, the fifth point about reporting. I don't think reporting has to just be the dry mechanical details of whatever the ESG is. It can be brought to life by some examples of as you mentioned earlier about the climate change, you know, the laggards being highlighted on the principle that, you know, shine a light into the darker areas, and the positive outcome is that, you know, things improve. In order to come to a conclusion here, I think, firstly, thank you, Mark, for your very valuable contribution to this debate. And really, from the point of view of you as the listener, trustees, I hope that this checklist has been helpful in helping you articulate what ESG is all about and the importance and relevance of it within a portfolio, not just for today, but actually how this will evolve into the future.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.